Rosh Akiva, Brandeis, Parshas Bo.
The first Makor, the first source that I'm aware of about a Goyle, the existence of a being which is created by man, is the Gemara in Sanhedrin Samachim Amud Beis. The Gemara says, Rava bara gavra. Rava created a golem. Rava didn't just create the golem. He sent him off to his friend Reb Zeira. But he didn't inform Reb Zeira that a golem was going to come. So a man, a being that seemed to be a regular human being, turned up at Reb Zeira's door. And Reb Zeira starts talking to him. He's very civil. He talks mentioned to this man, and the man doesn't answer, because a golem, as much as it can be a form of a human, hear, think, accept commands, walk, it cannot talk. Vayipach ba'apoy, only the Ribbono Shel Olam can give power of speech to a being. And therefore a golem cannot speak. So Reb Zeira is trying to make a conversation. He hears nothing coming back from the golem. So Reb Zeira sees that this is not just a mute, but rather this is a golem. He says, you're one of my friend's beings. One of my friends must have created you. Tuv l'africh, go back to where you came from. Go back from whence you came. And that morning there was a little bit of extra earth in Reb Zeira's front garden. The Chacham Tzvi in Siman Tzadik Gimel actually discusses the din of a golem when it comes to being mitzdarif to a minion. We have now, if you're on holidays, you have 9 people, and you have the ability to create a golem, or someone sends a golem to you. Could he be mitzdarif for a minion? We know you need 10 people for any Dovah Shem Kedusha, for Baruch Kedusha, Kaddish, etc. Could a golem be part of a minion? So the Chacham Tzvi has 2 tzadim. He discusses, one tzad is, he says, "V'nikdashti b'seich b'nei Yisrael," and the golem is not considered a ben Yisrael. He's not considered part of Klal Yisrael. That's one tzad.
Golem not speak though.
Doesn't speak. He can listen. A mute is certainly part of a minion. One doesn't need to be able to speak to be part of a minion. Certainly. As long as one is about das and a ben Yisrael, one can count as a minion. The question is a golem. So one tzad is v'nikdashti b'seich ben Yisrael. The other tzad he has is a Gemara Sanhedrin Yotesamud Beis. The Gemara Sanhedrin Yotesamud Beis discusses the fact that Michal Bas Shaul, the daughter of Shaul HaMelech, brought up children in her home who weren't her own. They weren't biologically her children, but nevertheless they were brought up in her home. She fostered them, adopted them. And the Gemara says the following statement. The Gemara says, "Kol ha-megadil yosoim b'seich beisoi." Somebody who adopts an orphan into his home and looks after him. Male olav akosov. The pasuk considers this keilu yolde, as if it's a biological child, as if it's a real child. And so, the tutz on the Chacham says, either we don't consider this a ben Yisrael or a yid. The other tzad is that certainly, since we see in the Gemara that's Kilo Yoldoi, so the pre-maisim, it's his words, the pre-maisim of a tzaddik, the fact that a tzaddik has created this being, it should be considered part of Klal Yisrael and counts as a minion. Those are the Chacham Tzvi's 2 options. His maskana, his psak, is from the Gemara we started with. The Gemara Sanhedrin Samachim with base. The Gemara told us, Reb Zeira had a visitor, which was a golem. And he says, since you see that Reb Zeira just easily, without batting an eyelid, turned this golem back into earth, apparently he has no value. He says, certainly Reb Zeira wouldn't have taken an important individual and turned him into a pile of earth. If he has a tachlis, he could join in a minion, he could answer Kedusha and Baruch Hu, he has a purpose in this world, a Kedusha, a purpose in this world, certainly he wouldn't have just made him disappear. And therefore, says the Chacham Tzvi, We can conclude from this Gemara that a golem has no kedusha digger value, has no spiritual value, as we see that Rav Zeira didn't deem him a necessary figure in society. The Mishnah Berurah actually brings this lahalacha. Mishnah Berurah is in Siman Nun Hey, Siv Katan Dalel Hilchas Tefillah. He says, when he's talking about needing a minion, if a katan counts, the Mishnah Berurah says, Ayin Chacham Tzvi, Siman Tzadik Gimel, with regards to a golem, with a being created by man. The Chazon Ish in Yerideah, Siman Kuftes Zayin Sif Aleph, Ois Aleph, says that he would seem that he doesn't count as Yisrael, and therefore certainly not for a minion. And even as a Ben Adam, which would explain how Reb Zeira could, so to speak, kill him. Yeah, we can't just destroy a being that the Rebbeinu Shem created, certainly not a human being. And we see Reb Zeira didn't seem to take notice of that. Zok the Chazon Ish, he doesn't even have a din of an Adam. So in other words, what we can conclude with this, that a golem doesn't have much ramification in halacha whatsoever. Even a behemoth has something. So now we've considered the only being that I'm aware of which has no kedusha digger value. Let's go to the other extreme totally. Literally to the other extreme. It's a fascinating Gemara. A Moridiga Gemara in Shabbos Pei Tes Amid Aleph. Before we try to unlock and find the key to this Gemara, it's important to introduce this Gemara by saying it's an allegorical Gemara. It's very abstract, difficult for us to understand, but certainly when the Gemara brings us a story, tells us something, it's for us to learn the lessons from the Gemara. The Gemara says as follows: the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, when Moshe Rabbeinu was on Olamayim, when he went up to Shomayim, and he saw the Ribbono Shel Olam putting crowns on the Osius. Says Rashi, this is referring to the Tagim. We know in the Sefer Torah there's Shatnas Gats. The Shin, Ayin, Tes Nun Zayin, and Gimel Tzadi have all got the little crowns on in the Sefer Torah. So he sees the Ribbono Shel Olam crowning the letters. And he's completely quiet. He's speechless. And the Ribbono Shel Olam turns to Moshe Rabbeinu and says, Ein Shalom Be'ircha? Do they not greet each other where you come from? In the city you come from, do people not say hello? This is the Ribbono Shel Olam's words to Moshe Rabbeinu. It says, Moshe, Klum Yesh Eved Shenosin Shalom L'Rabbi? Would it be correct for a Talmud to initiate the conversation in front of his Rebbe? Certainly he waits for the Rebbe, for the Master, to begin the conversation, and then we can converse. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, but Hayo Lachala Azreini, you should have helped me. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, immediately, Ve'ata Yigdal Na Koyach Hashem Kasher Dibarta, he gives a bracha. They should be successful. This Gemara is full of questions, begging to be answered. The Gemara is telling us that Ribbono Shel Olam asks of Moshe Rabbeinu, you should have said hello. Why didn't you say hello? Moshe Rabbeinu answers, because it's incorrect for me to speak first. And the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't say anything on that. So what was the Ribbono Shel Olam doing, kaviyachol, chas v'shalom, teasing him? Was Moshe Rabbeinu not correct in saying that it's not for a Talmud to begin the conversation? And then the Ribbono Shel Olam says, but at least you should have helped me. To think that the Ribbono Shel Olam needs help, it's certainly wrong. It's laughable, if not blasphemous. It cannot be. The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't need anyone's help. And here the Ribbono Shel Olam says, "Hoyel Chol, you should have helped me." Says Rashi, "What should he have said? Titzlach malachtecha, be matzliach, have atzlacha." What does the Ribbono Shel Olam need a bracha from Moshe Rabbeinu for? The Marshal says, "Tzadikim." They give a koyach when they, with their words, they give a koyach to Pamali Shomala. Reb Shlomo Freifeld, he expands on this point a little bit, on this marsha. He doesn't bring the marsha, but he expands on this point. He says as follows. He says, you know, let's go to the gashmius world, to the physical world for a minute. You take a seed, an orange seed, and you look at it. You've eaten an orange. I actually tried to find one this morning. 8 and 9, I couldn't find a seed. That's Today's oranges don't have seeds anymore. But back in the day when oranges had seeds, so you're looking at this white, almost colourless, simple, little seed, pip. Slips through your fingers. And without thinking about it too much, we cast it into a bin, we throw it away. But the fact is, if we think about it, the seed has a tremendous potential. If that seed is placed into the ground, it sucks, it nourishes itself from all the nutrients of the ground, and with water, either by irrigation or by rainfall, the seed can then grow into an orange tree, which then has oranges which can recreate the same orange. You can end up with orchards and millions, literally millions of oranges coming from one seed. All it takes is for a man, it can be a stranger, to take that seed and put it into the ground, and then he's unleashed this unbelievable potential of orchards and orchards of oranges. The same is true in the spiritual world, in the Ruchnistiger world. There's a tremendous amount, a huge amount of shefa, of bounty, awaiting to fall. But it takes the human being, it takes a man to unlock that potential, to unlock the wellsprings that are waiting to pour down onto man, onto the world. And therefore, what the Ribbono Shel Olam is telling Moshe Rabbeinu is, you're seeing tagim. You're seeing in front of you the Ribbono Shel Olam putting tagging onto the Oasis. And the Marashah says that the Ribbono Shel Olam putting these tagging onto the Oasis, these crowns are full of Kabbalah, they're full of halachas. Rabbi Akiva was Dorish. Tilei tilin shel halachas from these crowns. As they state. So for us to imagine this, it's like us walking into a room and someone offers you that you can take whatever's in this room. Whatever's in the room is yours. And you look at you, open the door, and you're blinded by the light of gold and diamonds and literally piles and piles of 50-pound notes in bundles amounting to millions of pounds. We'd be totally speechless. That's how Moshe Rabbeinu, on his level of spirituality, walking into a room where the Ribbono Shel Olam is putting crowns onto the letters. This is tilei tilin, piles and piles of halachas, kabbalah. It's the equivalent to us walking into a room with millions of pounds worth and someone says, this is for you. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, it's all ready and waiting. But it takes you, Moshe Rabbeinu, to say a few words to unlock this power, to unleash the strength so that it should pour down into the world. Say something, Moshe Rabbeinu. Do they not speak where you come from? Hayal chala azreini, help me. Not that the Ribbono Shel Olam needs help, chas v'shalom. Certainly not. That would be preposterous, if not blasphemous. But the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to do something. Make a move, and then the shefa comes down. That explains that part of the Gemara. Part of the Gemara where the Ribbono Shel Olam tells Moshe Rabbeinu, give me a bracha, tell me hatzlacha, say a good word to unleash the power. But the first part is still begging for an explanation, where Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, do they not greet each other in your city? Ein shalom be'ercha? Do people not say hello to each other? What did the Ribbono Shel Olam want from Moshe Rabbeinu here? Moshe Rabbeinu answers, when you're standing in front of the Gadol Hador, in our language, if we stand in front of the Gadol Hador, certainly you wait for him to speak first. You don't initiate the conversation. When he says hello, you can now ask your request. One waits for the person we're in awe of to begin a conversation. So it makes sense. So what did Moshe Rabbeinu say to him? Ein shalom be'ercha, you should have greeted me. What the Ribbono Shel Olam was alluding to is the idea that as much as it's true for spiritual things, for when there's a shefa of bracha waiting to be poured into this world, Torah, halachas, Kabbalah from the crowns on the letters that the Ribbono Shel Olam was in the middle of drawing kiviyachol, it's also true in this world. Between people, Ein shalom be'ircha. When you meet a person, says the Ribbono Shel Olam to Moshe Rabbeinu, don't you greet them? To empower a person walks in the morning, always in the greatest mood, but someone pats on the back and says, how are you doing? Good morning. We can unleash the power of another person. So Ribbono Shel Olam was saying, Firstly, amongst people, ein sholem be'ercha. What a good word can do to make a person have a great time, to have to change his day, to upgrade his mood. And then when Moshe Rabbeinu says, but it's not correct, it's improper for me to initiate the conversation. True. Ha'ilachala azrein. And now I've taught you something between people, now I'm teaching you something in the more lofty spheres. Of course the Gemara is allegorical. Of course the Gemara is abstract. But the lessons are there to be learned. Firstly, between people, says Ribbono Shel Olam, you can unleash the power of an individual with a couple of words. And then, with a bracha of Hatzlacha, say it to me. And Rashi's words are, Titzlach Malachtecha, have Hatzlacha, have a successful day. I hope you do well. The Rebbeinu is asking this of Moshe Rabbeinu in order for the Shefa, for the bounty to come pouring into the world. Rav Shach once asked the Bachur to accompany him on a small journey, a short journey from Bnei Brak to Petach Tikva. He didn't tell the Bachur what he wanted him to come for. He just said he wants him to accompany me on his little trip. So the Bachur comes along with Rav Shach in a taxi. And it was interesting, he found it interesting that the address that Rav Shach said he needs to get to, he didn't mention to the taxi driver. He told him a street further away, but he doesn't ask questions. So the taxi comes a street away from the destination, stops there, Rav Shach gets out, pays the taxi driver, goes out with the Bach, then walks around the corner, knocks on the door of their destination. A man and woman come to the door. Rav Shach said, I was passing anyway, I had an appointment, a local appointment in Petach Tikva. I just thought I would pop in just to tell you how well your son is doing in Ponovich Yeshiva. He's an asset to the yeshiva. He's really, his questions are fabulous. He's learning so well. We have such nachas from him. I thought I'd share that with you so we can have nachas together. Have a wonderful day. He walks again around the corner. They call a taxi. And they're on their way back. So his purpose of going to Petach Tikva was just to tell these parents about their son. The Bachur doesn't understand. It's over 1,000 Bachurim in Ponovich. What was this Bachur zeicha to and why? But he's doing his job by accompanying the Hashiva. He goes there, he goes back. A few days later he meets the Bacha in question. He meets the Bacha whose parents Rav Shach was talking to. And he says to the Bacha, are you aware of a visit? He says, sure, I'm aware of the visit. Of course my parents told me about it. Do you mind to tell me? It's been bothering me why Rav Shach went to the effort. He said, oh, I didn't know he came specially, but I can tell you why he might have come specially. So I'll share with you something private from my family. He says, my parents are going through a difficult time now in Shalom Bayis. And Rav Shach is aware of it. It's a very difficult time now. Not very peaceful at home. And it's not making it much easier, the fact that I'm not doing very well in yeshiva. And my father has his opinion that if I'm not successful anyway, I should be leaving, I'm going to work, do something with my life. And my mother's of the opinion that I should stay in yeshiva. And this argument in Hashkafa is also not making things any better. It's only stoking the fire. It's adding fuel to the flame. That's what Rav Shach saw to do. Rav Shach felt that by coming and telling my parents that I'm doing so well, it would have an effect. And you know what? Since that visit, my parents have been over the moon. They've been so overwhelmed with a visit of the God Lador to their door. Not only a visit, but to tell them how well their son is doing, it's totally changed their attitude, not just to myself, but to each other. And it's a slow process, but things are changing. They're working on themselves. They're trying to work things out. Up until this point, divorce was on the cards. Now, it's an uphill. It's a battle, but it's uphill. It's going uphill. It's getting better every day. Rav Shach understood that with a few words, one can change a person's life. And sometimes we don't know what's happening by another person. But still, Ein Sholem Be'ercha. The Pasuk says in this week's parasha, Vayechu Vayasu, when it comes to the Korban Pesach, it doesn't need to tell us that they went to do. It could say that Vayasu, they went and they were makriv the Korban Pesach. Says Rashi, Vayechu teaches us that Af Halicha Mona HaKosov. The Pasuk specifically counts the walking towards being mekayim this mitzvah as well. Litin schar lehalicha uschar lasir. To give schar, to give reward for walking towards being mekayim this mitzvah, as well as actually being mekayim this mitzvah. As well as observing the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, what, every step they took, every step is also reward, is also rewarded. In Parashas Noach, it says, Vayikach Shem Vayofes. That Shem and Yofes took the cloak when Noach was found lying in a non-becoming position. And Shem and Yofes, his children, covered his shame. And the pasuk tells us Vayikach in a singular Loshen, B'loshen Yochid. Says Rashi, why not Vayikchu? It would be correct to say Vayikchu, they took the cloak to cover Noach. Says Rashi, because shame initiated. Shame worked harder on covering his father. Yofes joined in. Yofes accompanied shame in this job. Because of this, there are colossal differences between the descendants of shame and the descendants of Yofes. Shame's children are Klal Yisrael. Shame received the mitzvah of tzitzis, ledore dores, for generations to come. We wear tzitzis, every second we wear tzitzis, is a merit, is a schus to Shame, our great-grandfather, because of his action of a few seconds, took a cloak and covered his father. Yofes also receives a reward, but not quite Shame's. He doesn't have Klal Yisrael, he has great nations. Yarchiv Hashem leYefes. All the great nations came from Yefes. The Greeks, the Romans, all the great nations came from Yefes. All the ones who made a mark in the world. And the final reward for Yefes is the Achris Hayom, when Mashiach comes during the Melchama of Gog u'Magog. Says the Pasuk in Yecheskel, the dead, the corpses of Yefes' grandchildren will be zeichet to kvur, will be buried. They'll be zeichet to burial. It's midah keneged midah. They covered the shame of their father. So Yefes' descendants, thousands of years later, won't have to be lying in shame on the streets, but rather they'll be zeichet to burial. But huge differences. From a tiny action, it was his idea, he initiated it, and Yefes joined in. The one who initiates is zeichet to Klal Yisrael, tzitzis, a particular mitzvah in his name and his merit. And Yefes also a great reward, thousands of years later, but midah keneged midah, the level of covering shame, but no initiation, no Klal Yisrael comes from his generations. But that every tiny action can have such a huge, literally epic result. Chizkiah HaMelech became unwell, and he davened Lekiris Beiso. He stood by the doors, by the walls of his home, and davened to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He was actually, the Gemara says, the first human being to become healed from an illness. Up until that point, a person died. Chizkiah was the first person who created this idea, which Baruch Hashem we see up until this day, people become ill and they become healed. Chizkiah was the first to initiate this idea in the world. And he davens and davens by the walls of his home. And the Ribbono Shel Olam promises him that he'll become healed and gives him a sign. And the sign is that the sun will return 10 degrees back to where it came from. 10 degrees back, and you'll know that you will become healed totally. Bladon ben Bladon, king of Bavel, king of Babylonia, sees something very strange going on in his garden. The sun has returned 10 degrees. He asks his ministers, his people, well, what's happening today? And they tell him, information has come through from Yerushalayim. The king, Chizkiah, was unwell. And they tell him the story, and Hashem promises him, and this is his sign. If there's a king like that in Jerusalem, if there's a king like that, we must write him a letter. We have to write him a letter. So he pens a letter. His scribe, who we know, unfortunately, Nebuchadnezzar, who was at the time the sofer, the scribe of Bladon, he was away. And so they wrote this letter without Nebuchadnezzar as the scribe. Nebuchadnezzar returns from his little break, and he asks what's happened in between. They tell him the episode, and he says, how did you write the letter? It's his profession. So they tell him, they wrote, Shalom to Chizkiah, the Melech of Yerushalayim, shalom to his city, Yerushalayim, and shalom to Hashem. Nebuchadnezzar says, no, this is an incorrect order. Hashem comes first, the king second. And they say to him, Kreiner de Igrusa, the one who has the idea of how to write a letter, you should organize this. You make the change. It's your idea. You initiated it. You change it. And then Nebuchadnezzar then chases after the messenger who has the letter. He's just left. He makes one step, two steps, three steps. On his fourth step, Gavriel stops him. The Malach comes down from Shemam to stop him in his track. Why? For every step that he made for Kavod Shemaim, this great rush of the Nebuchadnezzar, to say that Hashem comes first in the order, he has children, his descendants are Malachim, are royalty. Up until first Belshazzar and eventually Vashti in the fourth generation. Says the Chofetz Chaim, had he completed that fourth step, had Gavriel allowed him to finish that fourth step, we wouldn't be here to tell the tale. Because Vashti would complete her Malchus, she would have continued to be the queen throughout the reign in Bavel. Esther would never have come in as the queen of Achashverosh, and Klal Yisrael would have been wiped out. So Gavriel had to stop him on the fourth step, so that his descendants would end their royalty and still give Klal Yisrael his chus kiyum, that Klal Yisrael should have a future. Single steps for Kvod Shamayim, colossal merits, zechusim, a reward. These steps have a tremendous and huge reward. However, the Gemara tells us an interesting story which shows us that it's not always true. The Gemara Seitach of Beis Hamid Aleph tells us that we learn reward from an almana. Reward can be learned from an almana. Schar me almana. What's the story? There was an almana in the times of Rabbi Yochanan who would walk a great distance to daven in shul. And Rabbi Yochanan asked her one day, appreciate your membership, but don't you have a shul nearby where you live? Certainly we're not the nearest shul. He knew she was walking long distances. She says, of course, Rebbe. But you know, I get schar psius. For every step I make to reach your shul, I get merit. And I want more schar. So I walk to the furthest shul from the house. So Yochanan accepted that. However, the Maharal in the Siddhis Olam, in the Siddha Voida, says as follows. He says, this is true for a Beis Medrash, this is true for davening in a shul. However, for example, a sukkah, says the Maharal, if somebody walks to a sukkah which is further from his house, or makes a sukkah at the back of his garden, for no other reason other than to get schar psius, he won't get extra schar, says the Maharal. Why? He says, by a Beis Medrash is special. Because a Beis Medrash is a mikdosh ma'at, and every step one makes towards going to shul, going to daven, is being dovok in the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's getting closer to Hashem. One step, another step, going towards davening to Hashem, making a connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And therefore, every step walking to shul has an extra schar. However, with other mitzvahs, like sukkah, says the Maharal, there's no special schar if you make it further. Only if it's necessary to make those steps, you get schar for every step. But making yourself walk around the garden to get to your sukkah is no extra schar. It's only true for a Beis HaMedrash, a shul, which is a mikdash mat. So we've clarified the halachic perspective of the steps being very meritorious, very rewarding when necessary. In the case of a shul, in the case of a Beis HaMedrash, it's even when it's not necessary. Even if one walks an extra distance to go to shul, it's rewarded. In Yalkut Shimoni, Kuf Pei Zayin talks about Yitzias Mitzrayim and the fact that the dogs have a special shira that they'll sing one day. What's the shira? The song of the dogs. Says the Yalkut, Boyu Nishtachave V'Nichra, we will go and bow, V'Nivrachol Efnei Hashem Elokeinu, we will bless, we will bow to the Ribbono Shel Olam, a beautiful shira, a beautiful song of the dogs. And Reb Yishaya, a Talmud of Reb Chanina ben Doisa, was very perplexed by this statement. It bothered him immensely, to the point that he fasted for days and days and days. He wanted an explanation. A dog is an animal which the Gemara describes as an asponim, a brazen animal, a chutzpahdik animal. And therefore, how did he have this merit one day of singing such a beautiful song to the Ribbono Shel Olam? Nishtacha ve'nichra nivrcha lefnei Hashem v'nekeinu. How is this brazen animal going to have the merit of singing such a beautiful tune? It bothered him, and he fasted for days to get an answer. Eventually a malach, this is the Yalkut, a malach reveals himself to Reb Yishaya, this Talmud of Chanina ben Doisa, and he tells him, you should know, how long will you fast for, Reb Yishaya? You're fasting and fasting, you're causing a tumult in Shemayim. And he tells him, you should know, the first one to ever get the answer to this question was Chavakuk, the Navi Chavakuk, and no one has ever been told since, but we'll tell you the answer. And Reb Yishaya is then told that it's in the merit of the dogs being silent during Yitzias Mitzrayim. The fact that the dogs were silent, lo yecharatz kelev l'shoinoi. This is the great answer which Reb Yishaya receives. Okay? Because they were correct during Yitzias Mitzrayim, that's where they get this tremendous merit. I saw an explanation as follows. It's true, all he did was quiet during Yitzias Mitzrayim. But we have to understand a dog. Let's go into the psychology of a dog if we can for a minute. Dogs bark. That's one thing they do. Another thing dogs do is that they bark tremendously when they sense death. When it's spooky out there, dogs will bark more. That's a mitzvah. There was nothing like the night of Makas Bechiras, where Ein Bayis Asher Ein Shom Meis, every household had one. The sense that the dogs felt at the time was, it must have gone to their bones. And for a dog to be quiet at such a moment is a huge sacrifice. And therefore, and since we know schar is according to the effort, according to the individual, so then we know that why the dog gets such a tremendous merit. For him to be silent on a night like no other night, where his whole being wants to just bark, and he's silent for an entire night, he gets a tremendous merit. This teaches us the subtlety now. We've spoken about the idea of a few words being able to unleash bounty from Shamayim. We've spoken about a few words between people unlocking another person's potential for his day, for his life, for his month, for his mood. This tells us that it's also according to the individual. For one person, it comes more naturally to say Agishmaka, good morning. For another person, it's easier to give tzedakah. For another person, it's more difficult. For another person, davening comes more naturally. For another person, it's very difficult. So it's also according to the individual. The schar is according to the individual. That's what the schar by Yitzias Mitzrayim teaches us. It's not only a blanket statement, according to the words of a person, according to the action of a person, but also according to how the Ribbono Shel Olam created us. And whatever comes challenging to us, we make that tiny effort to change it, or we do that which is difficult for us. The schar is epic. It could be a few steps.
Sorry, you don't see the svadim got a schar for being most nevish. Sounds interesting. You don't see that the frogs, the makas, they get an extra schar for being most nevish jumping into the room.
The ones who went to the ovens.
You find the dogs.
They stayed alive.
Yeah, yeah. That was the dogs, it's very day, they still get the schar of thousands of years later,
we have a good question here. What about the fact, why do you find that otherwise animals, the truth is all animals through history that helped out, Bilam's donkey also didn't get any reward for either. So why didn't they get reward? The emes is that animals don't have bechira. They don't have free choice at all. That's the truth. Only human beings have free choice in the world. And all that we learn from animals, we learn from the Hanani Mishal Azar took an example of the frog. What sort of example is it? Frogs don't have bechira, for them it's a bechira. Animals are there for us to learn the lesson from. The Bereshit makes them do things, although it's not in their choice. Bilam's dog had no choice. The frogs had no choice, and even these dogs, on the night of they didn't have choice. So, to teach us this lesson. It's for us to learn the lessons. So it's not actually their schar, their reward for their behavior. A dog is a dog. The Bereshit keeps his mouth closed. But it teaches us the lesson that when one does something which is difficult, the schar is amazing. I'd like to end with a story. It's an amazing story which I heard from Yitzchak Shvadron, who heard this from his father, Abshalom, who heard this from the American soldier himself. It's an amazing story, and it brings out this point. It illustrates this point. There was an American soldier who, during the Second World War, spent time on a submarine and was wounded in action. He got wounded during the war. So, he leaves the army, he's given a pension, and he's able to live comfortably with his family for years on this pension which he receives from the American army. He's happy. He doesn't have to work hard for parnasa. He has a family, and the army is supporting him. He goes yearly for a check to see how his medical situation, how he's doing, see if he's still eligible for the pension. Years and years go by, he's over 40 years old, and one year during his yearly medical test, his annual test, they tell him, "I'm afraid you are healthy enough and you won't be receiving the pension anymore." He says, "I appreciate the news of my health, but how am I supposed to start life at this age with a family? I haven't started a business, haven't tried to..." He said, "Listen, rules are rules, I have to go by the book. I'm sorry, I have to take you off the list of people who get a pension." And this man is distraught, and he doesn't know what to do. So he tries to use all his old connections, which he's made from his army times, from his army career, and he uses connections, and each one says he tries, nothing actually comes to any real conclusion, until he's able to secure with one of his old friends, who now has a high government position, he secures a few minutes with the president of America himself. The president at the time was Eisenhower. And he prepares himself well for this appointment. He has just a few minutes. Sorry? He has a few minutes with the president. You can imagine he dresses in his Shabbos finery, and he's prepared the words. He's told he's got 4 minutes with the president. He's prepared his request to the most powerful and concise way possible. And he's ready for the appointment. He's there early. He walks in. And he tells the president his question, his request. He says, "I know it's an astronomical amount of money for a family to live for the next, you know, unlimited amount of time, really, tens of years. But on the other hand, how can you expect me, and I've given my life to the country, how do you expect me to start life now?" The president listens to him, doesn't say a word. When he finishes the question, he looks him in the eye and he says, "I want to tell you a story." He says, "You know, I was the Allied commander, the supreme Allied commander of the Allied forces during the Second World War. And I was on a mission, a marine mission, and I was with the troops on a submarine, and it was a very, very long mission in enemy waters. And we had to stay under the submerged. We had to stay submerged for a very lengthy period of time. And it was very difficult for the morale of the soldiers, squashed together in these cabins. And the worst thing for a soldier is for his morale to be down, for it to be low. And therefore, I was walking and pacing, trying to find ideas, comedy, games, charades. Nothing was working to really get the spirit of the troops. And I was pacing up and down, thinking, what next? What can we do to get the soldiers to be a bit more enthusiastic? Sitting all depressed together, squashed. And I walked past the room, and I heard two excited voices coming from the room. And I was thinking to myself, who's still got some happiness? Who's got joy in this place? So I threw the door open, and I saw two boys, two soldiers, sitting there on a bed with a huge book. And they were both pointing and shouting and punching the air between them. And I asked them, "What are you boys doing? How are you excited here?" And they told us that they were yeshiva bachrim before the war. And he turns to, and the president turns to this man and he says, "And you, who were sitting on that bed, you said to me at the time, you want to be a Talmud Chacham. And today, you're saying the same words to me, that you want to remain, being able to learn and become a Talmud Chacham, so your family should be able to continue to live in peace. You'll get your pension." Sometimes a few words, a behavior of a few moments, which I have no idea. These were troops, they had nothing to do. They were making up for some lost time, trying to get a few words of Gemara on a submarine. A few words can unleash the bounty from Shemayim, and a few words can unleash the potential of another human being.